The big step is do the thing that you are most afraid of, to teach yourself that it's not life-ending. The discomfort is where the growth is. Comfort and growth can't coexist in the same place.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Six Figure Certified. We have a groundbreaking episode today because we actually have our very first male guest on the show. I don't think I told you that, Bishop Foreman, but welcome.
You did not. Come on. History making.
We mostly have women listeners, but I really feel like your message translates across audiences. And with that being said, if you don't know Bishop Foreman, I'm going to have him do a quick little intro of himself, and then we'll just get into all the goodness.
Well, listen, I just added something to my bio. I am the first male guest of this amazing show. So we just added that. Yeah. They call me the people's bishop, Bishop Kevin Foreman, and I'm super excited. My entire life exists to help people go further, faster. And so that's the entire ethos. And I love what you just said, because at the time of recording this, our entire theme has been about history making, doing things that you've never done, becoming who you've never been, possessing what you've never possessed. So I didn't know that. And I love to hear that, because that fits thematically with what the entirety of this year is about. So super, super excited about that.
Awesome. So that's the perfect place I want to start with a question for you, because we talk to a lot of women, a lot of Christian or at least spiritual women and humans in general. And you said something about a sign. It's like, this might be the sign. And so often I find that we're always looking for a signier sign. Yep. Yep. Like, my son always tells the story, and I'm going to mess it up, and he tells it so much better than me, about the guy in the boat asking for God's help. Yes. He's drowning, and God sends him, or he's in the water, and God sends him a boat, and he's like, where's God? Where's? Yep. And I think we're always looking for a signier sign. So how do we know if it's from God or from spirit or from goodness versus like a lot of influence from the internet, for example?
Well, you know what? But I think what's important is, even if it was just a lot of influence from the internet, it's still a sign. Like, I think the way we imagine things to be ruins how good they actually are. Like, I think everybody is waiting on this burning bush with Moses moment, like where the bush is on fire and I am that. Like, that's Moses' journey. That is not necessarily your journey. We all have those really pivotal moments, but look at Moses' life. Out of 120 years, there was only one moment he had like that. So I think we're often trying to live on the mountaintop moments, when the reality is most of the signs don't come that way. So even if it is just something on the internet, you say, maybe it's just the algorithm, but it's repeating. And so the pattern is what we are looking for. The pattern is what we are after. And so I agree with you. I love that. We're sometimes looking for something more because we had this, we felt like it was just going to be this much bigger sign, this much bigger thing. Like, you know, I got into ministry. I accepted part of my calling. The joke is, I came out of my mom's room with the Bible in a briefcase. So I've always had this affinity towards spirituality, always had this affinity towards business, entrepreneurialism, and bridging those two worlds together. So I've always been that way. And I remember I was deciding what I was going to do. And I was thinking about where I was going to go to college, what I was studying, all of that. And I was 16 years old. We were leaving church for a New Year's Eve service, kind of a watch night. And New Year's Eve service, it was snowing. We were in Denver at the time. It was snowing. And I get in a car accident. And what's crazy about the car accident is that my car spins. I just got it, right? I'm 16. I just got it, you know, that October. And the car spins. I look, get outside the car, and the only thing I hit was a bus stop. You know, the little, you know, sit down bench, the bus bench.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I hit. And the curb. That's all I hit. But when I got out of my car, I looked at the driver's side, and there were these three gashes through the side of the car. And I said, well, what did I, there's nothing I hit where there would be three of anything. Even if it spun, it didn't hit the thing three times. It spun and hit once on the deal. And so I was like, what was this? Well, that was a sign. Now, it was a sign that was crazy in the sense that, what is this? But I got so angry. I said, okay, God, I know I'm alive for a reason. My life has just been spared. So what am I supposed to do? And that night, I actually went home and wrote my very first message that night. So to your point, we're always looking for signs, but sometimes they're right in front of our face that we miss it. Just like your keys, just like your phone, just like whatever. Yeah. It's right there. It's right there.
Yeah. Immediately when you're telling that story, I just kind of like picture it as the hand of God, like moving your car away from like getting super damaged. That's very powerful. Yeah. And so one of kind of like this was almost this like monumental, like near death experience, potentially. Maybe you didn't feel that way necessarily, but anytime there's an accident, I think it shakes you to your core and you realize the fragility of life yet again. But how do we, and I get so many humans coming into entrepreneurship and coaching that, you know, something horrible happens. And that's why they're like, I'm finally going to do this thing. But is it possible? And how do we do that? And I have joked about this before. I'm like, you know what, God, I really would like more lessons through joy rather than like letting it get to the most dramatic experience ever before I finally listen. But like, how do we be a little bit more proactive? Because I feel like that is maturity. That is a deeper level of spirituality, being able to move before crisis, before trauma. Mm-hmm. Like, how do we...
I love
what
that.
What would you say to people?
I really love that because I think it's true. But I think the reason that it often takes that is because we can be inwardly stubborn and not really admit that. Over and over.
I feel again, called out.
Yes. Yeah, listen, don't we all? Over and over, so if you look at the Bible, over and over, he would refer to the Hebrews as stiff-necked. And when you look at the concept of stiff-necked, like a stiff neck, like they won't turn to see it another way, right? So as a result of that, that's a form of stubbornness where I'm just not going to see it another way. Because often we live life as experts and not as students.
Yeah.
And I think if we live life as students, it'd be much easier to see it in an easier way, to not have to go through certain things. And I made that my journey. So that's 16. So you fast forward, I'm in business, I'm in ministry. By the age of 21, I built Denver's largest Black-owned mortgage company. We do some amazing things. And, in ministry, they put me in the Gospel Music Hall of Fame. We have all this great, great success. And then the industry that I was in collapsed. Like it wasn't just my company. The industry collapsed. I mean, it was like dominoes. Mm-hmm. And
what year are we in at this point?
So we are in 05, 06.
Oh, okay.
Before you get to the big of 08, but that's because it hit the secondary market first. So by the time it hits Wall Street, it's, you know, that thing has already been in the system for a couple of years. So, but anyway, we're good. End of 05, going in 06. And at the top of 06, all of these things happen. And so in that, I'm like, okay, this is crazy. How am I here? Like, you know, this was like a crazy moment. Like I watched one of the big banks that we use shut down on a Saturday on CNN. And then on Monday, I'm calling my rep for the bank. I'm like, what's going on? And later to find out, he said, oh, the bank it's gone. And then after that, it was like, boom, 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 boom. It was like dominoes. It was crazy. Yeah. That being said, I'm like, okay, how did I get here? And what am I going to do? Like, what's going to be my pivot? You know, so the Bible says a man that doesn't work, doesn't eat. So I was like, I got to work. So I'm sending out, you know, now, mind you, I've been a chief executive since I was a kid. And so I am used to, you know, making it happen, doing what I need to do. And I remember going through a really weird place in life. I'm sending out 40 resumes a day. And this is pre-Indeed and like Monster was just becoming a thing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So you still faxed them out at that time. Like you still fax your resumes at that time.
Yeah.
So I got this big, huge fax that's now in my home office. I'm faxing them out. Nobody's calling me back. I mean, they're saying you're overqualified. And I'm thinking, well, you guys aren't very smart business people. You should want someone overqualified to come in, fix what's wrong. You know, I'm not going to stay. It's going to work that way. But you should want that. Like, take advantage of being able to get cheap labor. But at the end of the day, I mean, Domino's wouldn't call me back to deliver pizza. And this is before they changed their recipe and was good. Okay. This is when it still wasn't good. It was just crazy. I remember going through that. And long story short, we eventually planted Harvest Church, which is now the History Makers Church, and which has been an amazing journey. But I remember looking at that, so why did I go through that? And here's the response. You wouldn't have said yes unless all of this happened. So it made me realize I stopped being a student in life and started acting like an expert. And whenever you act like an expert, there's a stubbornness that comes because now you want to be right. And now that because you want to be right, everything you see is confirmation bias to support what you've already decided instead of living life as a student. So when I see a sign, I can then follow the sign. I can then, you know, move from there. It was stubbornness. And that's the answer. Why do we do that? Stubbornness. So for every person watching, listening, the best thing you could do is say, where have I been stubborn? Where have I been unwilling to drop what I thought it was to pick up something different and something new? And when you make that shift, these types of things happen much easier in life. It doesn't have to be so traumatic and dramatic.
Yeah. That's such a good, obviously, story and like experience to share to prove this point. And I'm like thinking too, in coaching, we call this like context and stories. So we have these lenses through which we see the world. And if we really want to change our external world, we have to be willing to change these internal lenses in which we see the world and experience the world, or it just doesn't, you know, I've always said, like, you can Google how to do anything, but the reason that people don't do it is because of the way that they, the relationship they have with themselves, essentially. So I think that it comes with shifting the story that you tell yourself about yourself and about the way that you see the world. And that's kind of what you showed me, that unfortunately us stubborn people, which often make the best entrepreneurs, have a hard time shifting that story.
True. And I think that's the conflation you just made is exactly the unique paradox of it, is that that same skill of being relentless and unrelenting and stubborn, and I'm going to get it done and make it happen, that makes very successful business people.
Yes.
That same skill often makes very poor life people.
It's almost like you have to channel it into something.
You do. You really, really do. Because I look at that and say, you know what? But the reason that I've won and the reason that I win and the reason I keep winning is because of that. But then the flip side of that is that when I look at things that were dramatic and traumatic, the reason it had to be so extreme, it's kind of like bending something. Like if you're trying to bend it here, you got to bend it all the way back here just to get it here.
Yeah.
And it's that extreme that I think, frankly, most people live in. It's extremes. It's either all the way over here, all the way over here, all the way over there, all the way over there. Very few people learn how to live in this space, and that's the space that a student lives. So that's how I approach life. Now, I approach life as a student. I don't go around as an expert. I know what I know. I have my values, which don't change, but I am not married to the vehicle.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. My values remain the same, but the vehicle, how I'm getting to where I'm going, oh, I'll change that out in a minute.
I really resonate with what you're saying. And when I think about expert, I think about like being at the top. And if you always think of yourself at the top, then you almost deny yourself the opportunity to grow, even if you wanted to.
Yep. Because where will you go? The only place to go if you're at the top is down. And I think that's why we have to have those traumatic and dramatic things to give you a dip to get out of it.
Humble yourself real quick.
Exactly. Exactly. And listen, there are certain things that just life and life happens. Yeah. But I think there's other things where we can invite and bring on, invite into our lives in a way that we don't want to experience those things because of that stubbornness. And so I have learned my values, I am stubborn on those. The values, because those are intrinsic. Those are the bedrock. But the vehicle, not stubborn. I look at everything in life. Here's the way I've encapsulated it. This is a lease. So I'm leasing the vehicle. Mm-hmm. I'm leasing my methods. Mm-hmm. I'm leasing the ideology. It's a lease. So I'm not married to it. The only thing I'm married to are what my values are. Other than that, it's a lease.
I have so many more questions for you. But one of the things that you're talking about when you say that is almost like you have to be open to possibility. You have to be a student of life versus an expert. You have to be more attached to your values than how they are manifested in day-to-day life. But what do you say to the person who is all ideas, all vision, kind of all talk, no action? And we've all been there in certain, you know, ways of life, but they're saying they're like, I know I have it in me. I know I have this thing, but they never move.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what that is often what I've discovered in working with people and then leading tens of thousands of people is that a secret fear. You mentioned in a moment, the stories you tell ourselves. There's an internal story that dreams it up, but never goes and does anything with it. Ideas are easy. Implementation is difficult. Getting excited is easy. Execution is difficult. Now, you have to pick your hard, because both of those are hard. Sitting on a bunch of vision and never doing anything with it is hard. Executing that vision is hard. Pick your hard. And I think often it's this internal fear that goes much deeper, that often goes back. So this year in particular, I started doing some work. Something happened and it was a very innocuous thing. But because I live life as a student, I said, I'm going to investigate this. I'm going to open this up. Like why do I feel this intensely about something so insignificant? Okay. And so emotions are signals, like pay attention, look over here, emotion, out of motion, change. So look over here, pay attention. So I felt so strongly about something. It's like, why do I feel so strongly about something so insignificant? Like, this doesn't even make sense, the amount of emotion that I have attached to this insignificant situation. Why do I feel that way? So I went to school because I live life as a student. So I started unpacking that. I started calling past relationships. I started I started investing. I started asking questions.
You went detective mode on yourself.
Oh, I went detective mode on me, because often we're really good at studying other people, but we haven't studied ourselves. We don't know ourselves. We know what we like to eat. We know what our favorite colors are. We know that, but we don't really know ourselves.
Bishop Foreman, tell me this. Tell me your take on this. Do you think, now I understand you have already adopted this self view and it's been actualized as, you know, you're a student and, but there are some humans who need to move now for either financial reasons, or they're in unsafe situations, or they've lost their job or whatever.
Hi, it's Kalia, IGC coach training grad and six-figure certified coach. I know you're here listening to these incredible stories of successful coaches and wondering, when will it be my turn? I'm sure you entered this year with the goal of finally stepping into your purpose. And there is no better way than enrolling in IGC's internationally accredited coach training program. Enrollment is open now, and it is your turn. So take the first step by going to innerglowcircle.com/call right now and book a free call with me. Your six-figure certified story starts today.
Do you think that you can have success in bringing your vision to life without doing all of that personal work? Or how, like...
Oh, I love it.
How much do you have to do the inner work before you can, in your opinion, create a different reality for yourself?
Really good question. I think you have to build the plane as you fly it. Okay. I think the worst, this is my view, I think the worst thing we've been taught in culture is that I have to spend all my time preparing before I do anything. And so what happens is you have people who are constantly going back to school. I have a whole college that I'm the chancellor of, so I'm pro-education, I'm pro-school.
Sure.
But I'm pro-coaching, I'm pro all of those things. But we live in a culture where everybody's always getting ready to do nothing. Everybody's always preparing to do nothing. You know, I'm going back to school for this. I'm studying this. I'm looking at this. I'm doing this. And what I've discovered is you have to fly. You have to do the work as you fly the plane. So the big aha moment that I just shared with you, which is just one of several, is I'm doing this as I'm flying the plane. This plane is too big to land. I don't have time to land the plane.
You didn't like shut down the church, shut down the business, stop writing the book, stop speaking because you're doing this work. I am so grateful that you said that, because I do think, especially for women, we are trying to fix ourselves, heal our families, often heal partners who don't want to take a lot of accountability to do it themselves, but hopefully they follow you and start to do so. And then, like, we feel like we have to stop our dreams and fix ourselves. And women are sold that we have to fix how we look before we can date again. We have to get smarter before we can get the job. And I don't think men are often sold that same level of, like, you have to heal before you do. And I've always told our students, like, build it messy, build it while all of this is going on, because like you said, delay is the greatest enemy of wealth. And often we only get to become all of who we are when we have the resources and the means to become, to bring it to life.
And I can speak as a man that it happens to men too, especially more so in this culture. Get ready, prepare, get ready, prepare. And everything has to stop. Everything has to freeze. Everything. That's not life. That's not realistic. And what that also does is it teaches you to not do anything. I think the other reason, not only hidden fear, we've been taught to not do anything because, well, you better wait about this. What if this goes wrong? What if this goes wrong? What about this? You better wait for this. Wait for this certificate. Wait for that. And here's what I've discovered. Life is going to move on. Business opportunities are going to move on. Opportunities of the lifetime have to be seized in the lifetime of the opportunity. And so if you don't seize it, if you don't take advantage of it, it'll move past you and go to someone else. You don't have to wait. Heal as you build. And you, because guess what? You're going to have some new hurts as you're building. So you have to teach yourself how to keep healing and keep it moving. My one mantra is this: keep it moving.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have time to be stuck. We don't have time to, I'm shutting my life down. I just need, you know, I don't, no, we have to keep it moving.
what you have taught yourself or learned over the years, and now you preach or share or teach, is that discomfort doesn't mean don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So much. So true. In fact, often the discomfort is where the growth is.
Oh,
comfort and growth can't coexist in the same place.
Yeah. I think people run into this, and I've been guilty of it before too, but I have a rule that like I never quit anything without at least giving it 90 days, whether it's a new workout, a new business strategy, an ad strategy, anything. Mm-hmm. Always at least give it 90 days to see some type of result, right? But if I had thought that every bad thing that happened in that, for example, 90-day window was a sign that I shouldn't do it, I would be done. I would do nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But people think that challenges mean signs that you shouldn't do it. I actually think that they are signs you should. And typically, I think of them almost as like a test from God, if you will, even though I know people say God doesn't test you. I believe that he does. Test your commitment. Do you really want this that bad? And I think that that's how you know if you do or not. Like, are you willing to push through? I mean, like, think about childbirth. Like, literally everything is uncomfortable about birthing something new.
Yep, absolutely. And just to give you scripture, Deuteronomy 8:2, remember how I tested you? So Deuteronomy 13:13, just for those who need the scriptural support. So absolutely, God tests. And I think the thing about a test is the teacher can't talk during the test. So you have to rely on the lessons you got before the test. And because if the teacher talks during the test, it invalidates the test, then you got to go do it again. And so this is why sometimes people feel like, I just don't know what to do. Yes, you do. You already have your instructions. You want new instructions because of the discomfort. The instructions haven't changed. The directive hasn't changed. You just want new ones because this is uncomfortable. I'm not used to this. I'm unfamiliar with this. Just follow. In the military, they say it like this. Just follow the last order given. That's what we're to do. And I believe it like this. Great resistance means great results. If I'm not being resisted, I'm concerned because that might mean I'm doing something I have no business doing. It's the wrong path. If you were to spiritualize it, look at it like this, or use a physical example of a spiritual principle, look at it like this. I've lost now 125 pounds.
Wow. Congratulations.
And, thank you. Years and years ago, I lost the first 75 pounds, like three months. Then after that, another 20 pounds. And then the pandemic hits. I continued to eat as I did, but I went to go speak at an event in Huntsville, Alabama. And we've been pretty casual because, you know, during the pandemic, everything was casual. And so I went to put on, it was a formal event. I went to put on my tux pants and the pants were like, not today. And I said, I got to do something different. So I got into the gym and all that. I just set a new goal. So now fitness is like therapy for me. I don't miss her. Here's the point. But I got into the gym. I hated going to the gym. I didn't like the smell of gyms. I didn't like, you know, people sometimes when they're gym, you know, they call them like the gym rats. They'll kind of look at you and tell you're new. They can smell out somebody new and kind of looking at you. And I just was like, I don't want that. And then I was like, I want to keep my neck. So I was like, sometimes you see guys in the gym that just head, shoulders, knees, and toes. I'm like, I got to keep my neck. You know, I speak for living in front of people. Mm-hmm. Long story short, I noticed something that when I got into the gym, I was at a certain level of resistance, and that resistance began to give me results. And it's not that the weight got lighter. It's that I got stronger. Mm-hmm. So as I continued to increase my weight, I would max out all the machines. I would max out everything. Like I maxed it all out because I had reached the place to where the resistance was actually producing results. And I think for everybody watching, everybody listening, your resistance is necessary to build strength because what's ahead of you is going to require a stronger version of you than the current level that you're at in life. Resistance is the best thing that could happen for you because it's what actually makes you better.
Yeah. So I feel like I need to go back and listen to this for myself. And I'm kind of jealous that, or not jealous, that's the wrong word. I'm kind of like, oh, I wish I wasn't the interviewer. I wish I was just listening to this because I'm getting some value from hearing your stories. And also, like, you've been in the game for a long time and it sounds like you've had ups and downs, but I'm like thinking like the housing market, like a little ups and downs, but always up because you're committed to these principles and these values that you've shared with all of us. But there's going to be the person listening to this who's like, must be nice. right? Like, sure, she can do it, he can do it, they can do it, whatever, but not me. Like, they don't know my struggle. They don't know what I'm going through. They don't know about these personal battles. But like, what is even, I kind of want a baby step and a big step from you. Mm-hmm. Like, what is something that we can do, take on as a baby step? And what is something that you can say, you know what? You could actually take a bigger, like, how, what would you say to these people? Yeah.
Well, I would say, here's the baby step. The baby step is to change how you talk to yourself. Mm-hmm. Because you spend the majority of your time with you. Most people like to talk about their environment, my friends, family, you mentioned romantic, all of that. Lots of those are often mirrors. The reality is you spend the majority of your time with you, mm-hmm. and you have to talk good to you. And so the baby step is change how you talk to yourself. I really believe very powerfully in I am affirmations. And the short end of this, or the short version of that, is this. When Moses asked God, what's your name? He doesn't say God. God is actually not a name. It's a title. From a 6th century Germanic word, gudon, just means source. He doesn't say Jireh, which means provider. Abraham named him that. He doesn't say breakthrough. David named him that. Perazim. You know what God says his name is? I am. He says, I am that who I am, which is every time we speak an I am statement, not only is it affirming something in us, but it's like putting God's seal of approval on it. So yeah. When you say I am strong, it's like, boom, God put a name on it. When you say I am brave, God put his name on it. I am bold, God put his name on it. Start speaking different to you. And it's those I am statements. I do that every single day. I am, and I will do it this all day. I will, especially if I'm feeling something opposite that, like feelings aren't facts. So I don't give into my feelings. So I'm like, you know what? If I'm feeling really like frustrated, I'm like, you know what? I see so clearly. I am so clear-minded in this moment right now. It's an I am statement. That's a baby step.
Yeah.
Words have power. Words frame your world. Here's the big step. The big step. Baby step, big step. Here's the big step. The big step is do the thing that you are most afraid of, to teach yourself that it's not life ending. It's not life ending. And let me show you how granular this can be, because somebody's like thinking, oh my God, I'm going to move across the country. Okay, you can do that. But here's another thing when it comes to fears. If you make it a habit of giving into them, that's what your mind is going to default to, that way of thinking. So I remember one year I was like, okay, I don't like spiders and don't like snakes. And so I was the type, you know, now listen, this big alpha type guy, I go, dun, 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 dun. And then I see a spider. I go grab
all credibility. I'm just kidding.
Oh, listen, I grab a vacuum. I grab air freshener, like that type of thing. And it was so crazy. I'm like, why? I'm so much bigger than that. But there's something in me that makes me look at that and have this really almost apprehension that just doesn't make sense. Phobia, from the Greek word phobia. And so, you know what I did one year? I said, okay, there's this place in Denver where they had snakes and spiders. You know what I did? I went, I said, put the biggest snakes on. Like, put them on me. All right, let's go. And then I said, put the biggest spiders in my hand, and they put them right there. And I was like, okay, this is not that bad. I have had this phobia of these things for whatever reason. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to do it. So it's a big step in the sense of it's something that maybe there's a fear, but mm-hmm. it's really can be a baby step within itself, because it doesn't have to be the biggest thing. It just needs to be something you're afraid of. You have to teach yourself to punch fear in the face.
Yeah. I think it's also kind of like noting when you do those things. So we have this exercise in IGC, which is like auditing your life over a week and like mm-hmm. taking note of everything you did that scared you, or decisions you made mm-hmm. that you had been put. It's really collecting all of that evidence of your capabilities and like building that muscle. And I think that's really important. And I do think sometimes I'm not going to go put a snake on myself, but more power to you. But I would do like a crazy investment or something like that. And you're right, though. Like, usually it's not life or death. And usually it takes doing something big and different to actually be able to rise to the occasion, because you're rising to the occasion in your brain and visualizing it. Sure, that's cool. I think that'll keep you motivated. But if you never actually do it, then I don't know. I feel like you're going to be in one of those memes of all the like elderly people saying like all of the regrets of their lives. And that scares me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And listen, at the end of the day, wouldn't it be a shame to go through life and realize you never lived it?
I know.
There's a difference between breathing, existing, and living. And most people settle for breathing and existing. That's what culture does. The majority of culture, they're right in there. They breathe, they exist. They get up to go to work, to come home, to eat, to repeat the same thing day after day. And then on Tuesday, get some tacos and, you know, a margarita, whatever they're going to do. And then whatever they're going to do. And what I've discovered is often culture has really programmed people to just breathe and exist and die. Mm-hmm. Which is why it's so interesting to talk about spiritual principles. When they said, Jesus, what are you here for? He says, I have come that you might have life and life more abundantly. Why would that be the thing? Aren't people already living? Like they're breathing. They're talking to you. He's saying, no. In essence, he's saying, y'all are existing, but you're not living. You're not doing the thing I sent you to the earth to do. And I came for you to do that and do it more abundantly. Here's the more abundantly part, that your very life is what brings other people to life.
Yeah.
That's why when you help other people, you feel alive because that's life and life more abundantly. Yeah.
Well, I feel like this is a whole nother episode though of like the systems that have been created culturally, socially, politically, economically to keep you in this. We can't go there today because we're running out of time. But before we do go, Bishop Foreman, where can we find you? I just feel like this is the episode everyone needs. I kind of want to rush it to production and get it out before the new year so that people have something extremely motivating. But like, where can people find you? What should their next steps be if they want to continue to learn and grow from you?
Would love it. On social, it's all at Bishop Foreman across all the social platforms, BISHOPFOREMAN, just like George Foreman. I do not have 7 or 8 kids. But I have Bishop Foreman. And then the website's bishopforeman.com. Books are there. Okay. Music, messages, more. Everything is right there. And I'd love to know if you're watching or listening and this added value to your life, send me a message. Send me a DM. Instagram is the best place to do it. I actually respond to messages. People get shocked. And it takes me a while because I get several hundred a day. But I actually respond because I love to know the impact. I love to know what happened in the lives of people. What I do at this stage of my life is not just for my own gain. It is so that people go further faster. So good.
And we'll keep all of these website, social is linked in the show notes or in the bio. If you're watching this on YouTube, please feel free to also comment here. We will be back to answer any of your questions. And I just want to thank you again. This was such a gift. I feel like I learned so much and I feel like I have just set the tone to have such a better day just from this interview. So I owe you.
Thank you.
I appreciate you. And thank you so much for being here.